This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. In a moment, the multifaceted responsibilities of a school social worker. We begin a series about social work in our region with an examination of how school social workers, parents, teachers, and students sometimes all work together.
Also, Theater Squared prepares for the season's third offering, a comedy about dealing with life's pain called Tigers Be Still.
Support for KUAF is provided by Mount Sequoia Retreat and Conference Center, which features Music on the Mountain the first Tuesday of every month. February welcomes producer and recording artist Randall Shreve on Tuesday the 7th at 7 p.m. Walk-up tickets are available with proceeds to benefit the Restore Clap Auditorium Fund. Food and coffee provided. MountSequoia.org for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. Over the next several weeks on the program, we'll be examining the critical role of social workers in our lives, from elementary school social workers who help students cope to families facing the death of a loved one. Arkansas is one of only 20 states that does not mandate the number of social workers placed in school districts. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas begins our series with visits to the social workers in two school districts in our area. She also talks with parents who've been helped by them. Here's her report.
I met Ananda through Bates School. When I first met her, it's like, I didn't like her.
That's Carmelita, a mother of four and often on caregiver for nine grandchildren. She's talking about Ananda Rosa, a licensed certified social worker and social worker coordinator with Fayetteville Public Schools.
This is the woman. I mean, she was telling me, this is what you got to do to help yourself and your kids, you know. And I'm going, who is this woman coming in my house and telling me what I got to do? But when she did that, that made me realize that she was right.
One of the main goals of Ananda's job is to eliminate barriers that can keep kids from succeeding in school. This usually involves working with parents to ensure that students have the proper support at home. As in Carmelita's case, it is often connecting them with the proper community resources.
She says if you keep your Medicaid and stuff up, you won't have to worry about going back and re-signing up for Medicaid or anything like that. You know, she's helped me a lot. She's helped me when I needed a bill paid, or, you know, she was telling me different places that I didn't know that I could get help with a lot of stuff.
She has come such a long way, and she's just such a different person as far as just her stress level, you know, because it used to just be so overwhelming. And I mean, sometimes after I would talk to her, I would think, like, I don't even know how she survives. How does she get up every day? But she did. And I mean, it's a testament to her and her perseverance and her character, even under all of these crazy circumstances. But it was also because of the fact that we were able to link her with, you know, some support and to help her build a support system.
I met Ananda at her office, also known as the Outback. It's located at Fayetteville's former West Campus. With over 50% of Fayetteville Public School students on free and reduced lunch, one of the barriers to learning can be something as simple as hunger.
The families can come once a month, and they can get food, clothes, laundry soap, toilet paper. We have some shampoo. We've got toothpaste. We've got basic stuff. We try to keep the staples, beans, peanut butter, granola bars, and some snacks, cereal, fruit, so rice, you know, just whatever. And basically what we do is we give what we have.
Brandy Foshi is the social worker with Owl Creek Elementary and Middle School in Fayetteville.
Owl Creek is 70% free and reduced lunch, so 70% of our kids are living at or below poverty line.
On Fridays, Brandy sends snack packs home with some of her students, a Walmart sack containing about 8 snacks.
Items that children could prepare for themselves, so instant oatmeal, instant macaroni, Pop-Top vegetables, Pop-Top fruit. A lot of kids... you know, they either only eat when they're at school or they only eat well when they're at school.
To put food in her snack packs, Brandy uses the school district's Outback, but also searches for her own funding, with a majority of it coming from area churches and other private sources.
Even though I've never missed a snack pack week, every single week, they'll be like, are we getting snack packs this week? Yes, yes, you're getting snack packs this week.
Her success story is another of helping a parent jump through the hoops of what can be an overwhelming system. A kindergartner was having trouble in class, drawing the attention of his teacher to the fact that he could not hear. His mother, hearing impaired herself, had grown frustrated with trying to get help, inadvertently applying for food stamps rather than our kids for her son. That's when Brandy stepped in.
For a lot of these parents, it's just there's too many steps, you know, too much red tape. Sometimes they just need somebody to kind of hold their hand and walk them through it, which is really all I did for this mom.
She's being modest. Brandy went so far as to drive the family to Little Rock for an appointment at Arkansas Children's Hospital. Her inspiration comes from her own childhood, one that she describes as being less than ideal.
And grew up with lots of different people taking care of me. I was never in the formal foster care system, but I was fostered informally by a couple different families. So I got to see kind of social work from that perspective.
Fayetteville Public Schools has three social workers, Ananda, Brandy, and one other. They primarily work with the higher need schools. Rogers School District, however, has seven social workers. All students, no matter the school, have access to a social worker, making the district unique to Arkansas. Patsy Roycroft is the social work coordinator in Rogers.
In a lot of schools, what they're doing is compartmentalizing. So I only work with homeless, or I only work with special ed, or we only work with this. And that's the advantage to the way we're set up in Rogers, is we work with all of the students.
It wasn't always like this. Patsy actually started the social work program in Rogers, and she began in the junior highs.
Research shows that when kids transition from the sixth grade into the seventh grade at that time, that is when we start kind of losing kids, if you will, because they go from having a home room and, if you will, a more nurturing one environment to seven classes a day, so it's just more challenging for students.
Dealing with secondary schools differs from elementary. In the high schools, Patsy works more closely with students, helping them to develop life skills.
A lot of students don't see that, you know, they're developing patterns of behavior, of being tardy, being absent from school. And obviously, if they had those behaviors with a job, they wouldn't have that job for very long.
She says that they work very closely with the counselors. Her office at Tucker Elementary is next door to the counselor's office. It is similar at all of the more than 20 schools in Rogers.
We have different skills than what the counselors have. Counselors are very much academics and testing and scheduling and those types of things. Social workers, because there's, especially at the elementary level, there's one counselor per school. And so if we need to do home visits, which is something that we do a lot of, the counselor can stay in the school, then we go out and we do the home visits. So we very much work as a team.
School social workers also work very closely with the teachers, often relying on them to be the eyes and ears. On this particular morning, a teacher alerted Patsy to a girl who was saying her family was moving into a hotel.
So I was calling the mom just to see if they needed any access to community resources, what their living situation is. Some of the time that does happen, we do have quite a few homeless students in our district, and we want to make sure that they have access to community resources.
As it turns out, the little girl was just confused. Her family is actually moving into an apartment. Though poverty issues are often the root of problems, it isn't always the case. A year and a half ago, David Lehans, a firefighter and married father of four, had a tree trimming accident, leaving him unable to work.
So we were trying to make all those adjustments and had been told by the surgeons that I may have to retire. So we were looking at all of our different options and trying to plan ahead. And Vicki had a lot of insight into the fact that, you know, with all this coming about and with young kids in the house, what we might be able to do and what our future would look like and how we could plan for that. And she had been in a similar situation, and that really helped my wife to be able to have somebody to connect with and talk to about that.
Asking for help wasn't something David was accustomed to, but the relationship with the school social worker aided him and his family get through this dark time. He imagines his life had he not made this connection.
It's very likely that my wife and I would be divorced. I guess it's, you know, with animals, they just kind of accept that the end is near if they can't get up and move and do and take care of themselves. Well, I had kind of looked at that and said, you know, if I can't take care of myself and my family, what's the purpose of all this?
The school social worker helped him find that purpose by showing him the light at the end of the tunnel. He and his wife are in the process of starting a nonprofit educational farm. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Our series on social workers in the region will continue a week from today when Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports on social workers dedicated to improving the lives of elders in all kinds of situations.
Tonight, the second in a year-long series of concerts on top of Mount Sequoia will feature singer and songwriter Randall Shreve. The performances, the first Tuesday of each month, help highlight the dozens of acres on top of the mountain that overlooks Fayetteville. The price of the show, $5, goes toward a plan for restoration of Clapp Auditorium on the campus of the Mount Sequoia Conference and Retreat Center. Lamar Pettis, the interim executive director of the center, says tonight's concert is part of a process to raise the Hideaway's profile. He says the campus, not even 2 miles from downtown Fayetteville, holds many surprises, even for him.
Well, you know, I have been in Fayetteville for 40-plus years and have served on the board for 4 years and only learned about 3 weeks ago that Clapp Auditorium was originally an outdoor pavilion that was converted in the early 60s to the facility that it's in now. But it was really designed initially as a place for worship, a larger venue for worship. It has been used by choirs, you know, bands. But what we're trying to do is tell people about it, let people know about it. And if you have, you know, churches you don't have to be a United Methodist church, but any church in the area, any junior high, any organization that wants to come up and use our auditorium, it is open to the public in general, and we will work with them on making it feasible that they can use it and attract a crowd.
There's a lot that's up on top of Mount Sequoia.
It's
at the retreat.
42 buildings. We can, of course, we can have meetings rooms for 200 up to 300. Our cafeteria will feed about 250 people at one sitting. We do have an exclusive caterer, and that caterer, by the way, we're going to do a brunch after the Easter service this year, offer a brunch to the people who attend the Easter service or anyone that wants to come up. And we're going to start a first Sunday brunch in March as well. And so we're inviting the general public. Initially, these brunches will be by tickets only. You have to buy an advance ticket just so we
know who's coming.
Yeah, on Easter Sunday, we have from 300 to 400 guests. And if we prepare for 400 and only 100 eat breakfast, well, then we're in trouble. If we prepare for 50 and 100 eat breakfast, well, we're in a whole lot more trouble.
So you've lived in Fayetteville for more than 40 years.
Right.
Been on the board for 4.
Yes, sir.
What prompted you to take that step?
I was asked, of course, to come onto the board as I practiced law in Fayetteville for many years. And my feelings are is when boards invite lawyers to participate, they really are seeking some free legal advice. But you know, I've been a Methodist all my life and was honored by the invitation. And the way I got into my situation now, being the interim director while we look for a new executive director, is I was a retired person, did not have a job, and was not smart enough to say no when offered the opportunity. But it's been a lot of fun, and it's been fun trying to get the community aware of what we have. We have sleeping facilities, both cottages and houses and dormitory-style living up there that we can house up to 450 people in any one evening. We really cater to the churches, the religious community, but we have numerous groups. Probably 80% of the people who use the mountain and the facilities, the cottages, the residential facilities last year, probably 80% of them were not connected with the United Methodist Church. And the United Methodist Church slogan is, you know, open hearts, open minds, and open doors. And we're a true example of that.
Randall Shreve is tonight, and then every first Tuesday throughout the year.
We're trying to develop a Mount Sequoia recreational pass to make more people aware of the fact that we have a swimming pool.
Tennis courts?
We have tennis courts. We have a sand volleyball court and basketball courts. And if you really want to get involved, you can play horseshoes up there. But we're going to try to find out what type of interest there is in those facilities. And if there's sufficient interest, we're going to hopefully engage a person to teach swimming lessons to younger children. Mm-hmm. And to teach tennis lessons to people of all ages, and to open the, you know, hire full-time lifeguards and actually open the pool for the summer.
It's right in the middle of Fayetteville. Maybe not geographically the middle, but it feels like the middle. It's on top of Fayetteville.
Yeah. I tell people it's about 5/10 of a mile from the entertainment district on the Dixon Street. And it's, you know, it's amazing. It's just 32 acres. You think that you're out in the woods. You can watch the deer come and bed down at night. It's very quiet. Our slogan is, or our logo is, tranquility above the city. And we're away from the bustle, the business of the city. We have a lot of university parents come up, and they'll come up and stay there and have their college student come up to visit them on the mountain. And I tell parents that I know, I said, you know, it's one way to stay out of the busyness of the city and the messiness of your child's room or your child's apartment.
Lamar Pettis is the interim executive director of the Mount Sequoia Retreat and Conference Center in Fayetteville. The center's next Music on the Mountain concert is tonight at 7 at Clapp Auditorium and features Randall Shreve.
Earth, sky.
Tuesday, February 7th, the moon turns full today at 21:54 Universal Time.
The instant of fullest moon is the same for all of us around the world, but our clocks read differently according to time zone. So, for instance, in the U.S., the fullest moon happens today at 4:54 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or 1:54 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
This February full moon is the second full moon of 2012. In North America, we call it the wolf moon, snow moon, or hunger moon. Every full moon stands opposite or nearly opposite the sun. That's why on the nights around or on full moon, the moon rises in the east at sunset.
Anytime you see the moon near the horizon, it might have a reddish color. The reason is Earth's own atmosphere. You see a moon low in the sky through more of Earth's atmosphere than when the moon is overhead. The atmosphere scatters the bluish component of light, but allows the redder light to travel straight through to our eyes.
Tonight's moon shines close to Regulus, the brightest star in the constellation Leo. And Mars is not far from tonight's moon. The moon will be getting closer to Mars in the next few evenings. For daily sky charts, come to earthsky.org. Look for our Tonight page. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Efforts to expand an energy transmission grid used by 9 states, including parts of Arkansas, got the green light, and initial work will begin later this year. Officials with Southwest Power Pool of Little Rock say the bulk of construction and engineering costs for the 10-year plan could total $1.7 billion. Pete Holscher with the SPP says the project will help improve the reliability of the bulk electrical grid.
In some cases, it is upgrades to existing infrastructure to help ensure the reliability. And in other cases, it is actual new construction, new lines across that area, across our footprint, to either bring electricity from certain areas, from generation across to other parts of the footprint. So it's a combination of both upgrades and new construction.
He says that it also calls for more than 900 miles of new transmission lines and 15 transformers.
Arkansas-based Axiom is planning to add 150 workers and more over the next 6 months. Director for Staffing Tim McKenna says an additional 150 workers will be needed to supplement efforts by the company to break further into digital media and marketing technology.
They'll be working on new products. A lot of those products are going to be related to creating a way for us to process digital data better than our competitors. So we're looking for individuals that have a strong technology background and also the ability to learn new technologies.
Most of the recruits will be working at Axiom's offices in Little Rock, Conway, and Fayetteville. Others will be based at the company offices in San Francisco Bay and New York.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 31st season of entertainment presents Come Fly Away Monday at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center. The Broadway musical combines the vocals of Frank Sinatra and the creative vision of dance choreographer Twyla Tharp. Tickets and more information available at uafortsmith.edu. Tuesday, February 7th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Guess what? Becca Beckett-Martin, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, is back with us.
Wow, if that's the best surprise you get to get today, you guys have been cheated. You knew that was coming. However, as always, I have things to tell you about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tonight at 7 o'clock at the Benton County School of the Arts Performing Arts Center in Rogers, Willy Wonka Jr.
Yeah.
The pictures are adorable, so I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun. Tickets are $7 to $12. You can call 636-2272 extension 2213 for tickets.
Is it one night only?
Oh, no. It goes through the weekend.
Oh, okay.
And a couple of heads up for tomorrow. Mother Nature is reading again at Hobbs State Park at 10:30. Tomorrow's topic is Turtle. And at 11:30 or 5:30 tomorrow, Drawing in the Galleries at Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville. This topic is American portraiture.
And that first room, that first gallery you go in is really, you know, the earliest American portraiture there is.
And fun that you can go and study it.
Yeah. Hmm.
So that's tomorrow, and you can find out more at crystalbridges.org.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
150 years ago, with bands playing patriotic tunes and battle flags flying, the Union Army of the Southwest marched into Northwest Arkansas on February 17, 1862. Hurrying past Elkhorn Tavern, the Union's advanced troops encountered a strong line of Confederate soldiers at James Dunnigan's farm in the Little Sugar Creek Valley. While artillery roared, the opposing cavalry and infantry hammered at each other until darkness fell over the field and the Confederates fell back. Though one Arkansas soldier characterized the fight as a right brisk skirmish, this first battle fought entirely on Arkansas soil yielded 13 Federal dead and about 20 wounded, while as many as 26 Confederates lay dead on the field. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Crist.
The third production of the Theater Squared season will open this week. Tigers Be Still is a comedy that includes how people deal with disappointment, expectations, family, depression, and a loose tiger.
Last week, several members of the cast and crew joined me at the Fayetteville Public Library for a conversation about the play, which opened originally off-Broadway to high critical praise in 2010. Bob Ford, the artistic director of Theater Squared, joined cast members Quinn Gassaway, Rick Holden, Lauren Blumenfeld, and Amelia McLean in the discussion.
and director Portia Krieger, the director of the Theater Squared production and assistant director of the original run in New York. She began the night by talking about the literal and metaphorical implications of the title.
The sort of inciting event of the play is that a tiger has escaped from the local zoo. So I don't know, I would say the tiger functions as mostly a source of anxiety for Rick's character, who plays a school principal. The school is within 1 mile of the zoo, so he has sort of decided that this is something that's putting his students at a lot of risk and feels like he has to kind of be very vigilant in watching for the tiger. It functions as a metaphor, I think, for all of the kind of fears that stalk us, especially when we are in positions where life has gotten a little bit hard. I mean, we all keep sort of saying that the play is a comedy about depression. So I guess you could say the tiger is kind of like that commercial for, is it Abilify, where there's like the little shadow that's following the woman around. That's kind of how the tiger functions in the play, is it holds a lot. It represents everyone's kind of fears and anxieties and the things that are inhibiting them from living life as they want to live it.
This is, Susie, you said the word fresh in your introduction, and this is a fresh script, premiered in 2010.
Yeah, about a year ago.
Yeah.
A little over a year ago.
So, Bob, I want to ask you, as artistic director, we've talked before how you become aware of scripts and how you get them, but I wonder if there's any sort of negotiation. Is there any work Theater Squared has to do with a director or a playwright to convince them that this is a good place for the script to be home for a while?
Royalties. Well, no, in this case, the script was that considered an off-Broadway production?
Mm-hmm.
So the script had a very prestigious off-Broadway production. It was not going on to a commercial run on Broadway, and so it was available. And at that point, a theater like Theater Squared has grown to be a theater that would be where a playwright and a playwright's agent and everything would be interested in having such mm-hmm. a play done. I'm not sure whether there are any theaters where they would have been rejected, but I do think that we're now on the map enough so that they'd say, "Oh yeah, great! It's an Equity house out in Arkansas. Let's get it there." So yeah, no negotiations
just
for that one. I think we maybe negotiated a little bit with Portia just to tried to line up the forces of good to get her out here, but that was probably all in my head anyway. Just when you come and say, yeah, we're at Equity Theater in Arkansas, there might be a slight Arkansas, and then but I don't know if that happened this time around. We had a mutual friend where we met each other through.
Did anyone that's up here have that inflection when they first said Arkansas? Was there
Oh, I definitely did.
Yeah?
Yes. Yes, I did.
How long have you been in rehearsal now?
This is the beginning. Today was the first day of our third week.
You know, at various things that Theater Squared has done to kind of get people ready for this season, there was a little scene that you pulled from it. And it involves a couch and someone who's behind the couch, and it's kind of a funny scene.
I'm so confused. Someone else was mentioning about being behind the couch, but there's no one behind the couch.
Forget the couch.
The couch has
been scratched since
I
have seen this preview.
I don't want you guys to come to the play expecting that someone's going to pop up from behind a couch, because it doesn't happen. So I'm really sorry.
I can work it in.
Yeah, I bet you can.
I suddenly remember where that's from. That was our little brochure, our
right.
season living
yeah.
brochure.
So see, I'm not the only one who's seen that. Thank you. Okay, I'm not crazy.
That had a lot to do with the actor Jim Goza, who's our good friend,
mm-hmm.
and his sense of humor and the moment then. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
But, yeah. Yeah. It's nothing like what you saw in that living brochure. Never believe the living brochure.
All right. I would have been waiting for that the whole time.
Yeah, thank it's you. Not there. Kyle, will you make sure that you say that on the radio, that no one's coming out from behind the couch?
There is no couch. All right.
Oh, there is. There is a couch.
There is a couch. Just no one comes out from behind the couch. Okay.
Yeah.
What if we saw a scene right now that is in this production?
Yeah.
What if?
Yes. Can we have some setup here?
This is the very beginning of the play. So I think it'll be self-explanatory because Sherry actually is talking directly to the audience. So she's going to help set you up.
I got it. This is the story of, well, I guess. Okay, this is the story of how I stopped being a total disaster and got my life on track and did not let overwhelming feelings of anxiousness and loneliness and uselessness just like totally eat my brain. I hope it will be an inspirational tale of triumph. I need to tell you a few things before we get started. First, my name is Sherry, and I'm 24 years old, and this is my home. Welcome. I live here with my mother and sister, and for the past month, all three of us have just been sitting in here depressed. And that's bad. But today is good, because today I am getting out of the house, because today I start my very first job as an art teacher in a school. And the first thing that happens at my first job is an emergency assembly.
Check one, check one.
The assembly is called by my first boss, Principal Moore, in order to alert everyone that
this morning, a tiger escaped from the zoo. Officials have told us that this tiger could be anywhere within a 100-mile radius. Since this town is within 1 mile of the zoo, that places us well within the range of extreme danger. Here are the things I know about tigers. They are fast, they are big, they are mean, and they have stripes. Okay. So the question is, what is Oceanside Middle School doing to protect you, the student body? Well, we have canceled recess indefinitely. I know. PE classes will focus on indoor sports. Basketball. And the other ones. Furthermore, we have three highly trained policemen who will be standing guard outside the school in shifts throughout the day on lookout. We also have three highly trained lunch monitors who will be on lookout inside the school. Furthermore, we have all instituted a school-wide buddy system so everyone is accountable to at least one other person. What's that? No, I don't have a buddy. I have a rifle. Any other questions? Okay. Have a good day, and try to carry on like normal.
Principal Moore didn't just hire me to work at his school. He also hired me to work one-on-one with his son, Zach. Zach works at CVS. Zach has anger management issues.
This box won't scan. Would you mind getting me a new one? Yeah, I'm sure you know how much they cost, but I need to swipe it. Oh, it's not that I don't trust you. This isn't an issue of trust. It's an issue of store policy. Fine, fine. Maribel, I'm going to need a price check up here on these extra large odor protectant tampons. In case you missed that, that's extra large odor protectant tampons. That's gigantic tampons that have deodorant in them. For the lovely lady standing at the register in the purple hat.
This is my sister, Grace. Grace just got out of a long-term relationship, and it was not her decision.
Huh?
Hey, Grace.
What's going on?
I really need Grace to get off of the couch for my first appointment with Zach. But when I ask her, Grace, can you please get off of the couch? She tells me,
I wish I could, but I can't because I've lost the ability to move.
Well, you must have been moving at some point today because I see you made another trip to Troy's condo and stole something random.
That's not random. That's a spice rack.
Right.
And I didn't steal it. I earned it.
That's what we brought.
That's great. Portia, let me ask you, because you were assistant director on the original run, what do you think about what you can or cannot say? I mean, you don't want to be the person who comes in the first day and says, well, when we started this, when it originally ran, it was like this.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, the thing that I've sort of been using as my measuring stick or my frame is like what to steal and what to not steal. Because I do feel like I was very lucky to work on that production with a director that I admire tremendously. And I got to know Kim, and she and I have since become really good friends and are collaborating on some other things. So there was a lot of, it was just a really great experience for me to be able to do that. And it is challenging, definitely, to try to approach it new. I remember the first time I talked to Bob, you know, he was like, well, what will you do differently? And I said, it's all going to depend on the people. And that's the thing that I've been trying to use as my benchmark is, you know, like, how do we make the play with these people who are here with us? Because they're very different people from the New York cast. And then there are things that, like, that we weren't able to do in New York that we are able to do here because we have a little bit more space. The show is performed in a really teeny tiny theater in Manhattan. So we here have the luxury of a staircase. And we're able to really kind of use the entirety of the theater squared space, which has been a lot of fun for us. And I feel like, I don't know, I hope I'm not driving these guys crazy, but I feel like it is helpful to have been present for a lot of the rewriting of the script that happened in New York, because I think I understand a lot of the reasons about why the play is written the way it is, because it was sort of very actively being worked on while we were there.
Excerpts from a public discussion of the upcoming run of Tigers Be Still, produced by Theater Squared. I moderated that discussion with members of the cast, Quinn Gassaway, Rick Holden, Lauren Blumenfeld, Amelia McLean, as well as the director, Portia Krieger, and Bob Ford, the artistic director for Theater Squared.
The play opens at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville on Thursday and runs through March 4th. For more information, theater2.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Furman Garner Performance Studio today is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. How are you?
Good. This is a much bigger office. You were, and were you upgraded?
Work happening right now inside the regular studio. So hopefully
technical difficulties.
Well, a technical upgrade.
Oh, fancy.
Yes. Glass half full.
Wow.
It's award season. We've been talking about Oscars and SAGs and Golden Globes, but music gets to sneak in now with the Grammys.
It does always feel a little bit strange to have that right in the middle of all the other stuff, but it's also kind of a relief. I mean, to reward the best music, the Grammy calendar goes like October to October. So sometimes you see some of the nominees and you think, wow, that seems really old.
A year and a half ago. Yeah.
Right. But they do, you know, their calendar is a little bit different. And they have about, this year they decided to reduce the category load from like 100. It was getting up to about 100. It's in the 70s now. They combined a lot of the categories and they did away with some of them. And then they also said if you don't have enough entries in a category, then it doesn't exist for that year or it gets combined. So,
for example, Polka,
right,
will not have a Grammy this year.
Right.
But if there is this resurgent a polka,
yeah, if it has like 15 entries or something,
right,
then it'll come back. And then they also, you know, it was across the board. So even in the big categories where they had plenty of options, like pop, they combined male and females together and just have pop performance.
Which, it's about time.
Right. You know, they did the same thing in country and R&B and all those categories that could have made it by themselves. You know, with the Grammy voters, that might tend to... I wouldn't want to be a man up for any of those awards because they do tend to reward for performance females more. But
yeah, I think for best pop performance, there's only one male nominee this year.
Yeah, Bruno Mars.
Right. And
so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But of course, it doesn't really change the fact that only maybe 10 of those 70 will actually be shown during live television.
Well, it seems as the music industry has changed, the idea behind the Grammys has as well. It now seems it's this annual showcase to remind people to buy music.
Right. I mean, they
pull out, to use an old musical term, all the stops.
Mm-hmm. And they always have a huge production budget, and they always do a really good job with their vocalists and stuff. We'll see how it goes.
It seems when I grew up, the broadcast was about 50% statue giving, 50% performance. It seems like it's more like 90-10 now. It's
right.
Almost all performance, which
well,
I have no problem with.
They always give the big four, record, album, song, and new artist, and then maybe three or four others in genres.
Mm-hmm.
But they leave the most of them to the pre-show, and then they just run the winners on a scroll.
And they always try to surprise us. We don't know who is going to be performing with whom necessarily.
Right.
We might know that this person is going to be on stage, but they've been working on a collaboration with, I think back, maybe it was just last year when Bob Dylan and Mumford and Sons and all these sorts of...
Right, and they had CeeLo Green and Gwyneth Paltrow
right.
and the Muppets. And, you know, you even look back, Elton John and Eminem and Beyonce and Prince and, you know...
It was just a few years ago that Pink did that thing where she was up above
in the air and
crowd.
Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson
right.
and Neil Diamond. And, you know, I mean, it just, they do, they have a tendency of surprising to keep it interesting. But, you know, like at the end of the day, it's those big four that people mm-hmm. care about. So,
well, if there are surprises this year in the big four, it's because we won't hear the name Adele.
Yeah, I think that she will win Record of the Year, which is for overall record production for Rolling in the Deep. I think she'll win Album of the Year for 21. Not just because it was the critics' favorite this year, mm-hmm. but it was also the best-selling album of the year. And it spent 17 weeks at number one, and it's had three number one singles. So, I mean, it's just one of those rare instances where everything kind of comes together. And I think she'll win the songwriting award for Rolling in the Deep. So the only one of the big four that, you know, she's not eligible for is Best New Artist, a category she won a few years ago.
Yeah.
So this year, I guess Best New Artist is really between a country act, the band Perry, mm-hmm. which I don't think that'll really flesh out. Nicki Minaj, who was huge this year, and she really probably should win. And then you've got Bon Iver, mm-hmm.
who's been around for a few years.
Right.
But because of some Byzantine rules, is officially a new artist under Grammy guidelines.
Right. And that particular, you know, project has got a lot of nominations up there in the big categories. And so you kind of feel like, well, I guess this will be that'll go to Bon Iver this year. And then when you start shaking out the other categories, you start to see people like Adele will probably win the pop performance and the pop album. So she very well could go 5 for 5. And then you've got Kanye West is in a lot of the rap categories. And if he shows up, he should do well in those categories. And, you know, other than that, I mean, it really does... With the exception of, you know, rock may go to the Foo Fighters, things like that. But it really is the Adele year, you know. And it's interesting. We've spent a lot of time over the past year talking about Adele from when the album came out. And it's not just because it's so popular, because popular albums don't win Grammys. It's not just because it's the critics' favorite, because critics' favorites don't always win
right.
Grammys.
But
she has everything going for. So it would be a big surprise. And it'll also be a surprise on Grammy night because it's her first performance since having throat surgery.
So she is going to perform?
She is slated to perform. So that'll be interesting to see. And then, of course, you know, you've got all the other interesting people like Lady Gaga's up and... you know, they've got a lot of great performances, so it's a good program to tune into.
Wayne, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And this is Ozarks at Large. Time to give away a couple of movie passes.
All right.
To any Malco movie theater in the region. Today's question deals with the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
It was on this day in 1812 that Dickens was born. Now, many of Dickens' works have gone on to be adapted for the movie screen.
Right.
There are many, since at least 1913, there have been versions of A Tale of Two Cities.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas Carol's been
sure.
The Muppets' Christmas Carol, Scrooge. There was even a movie called Garfield 2, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Yes.
But out of all the Charles Dickens movies that have been adapted for the big screen, only one has ever won the Oscar for Best Picture.
Oh.
So call up and tell me either the Dickens work or the movie.
Okay. If you know the answer, you have a guess, give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 7th of February, 2012. It's the birthday of two famous Midwestern authors, Laura Ingalls Wilder and Sinclair Lewis. Sinclair Lewis, born in Sauk Center, Minnesota, 1885, author of Main Street, Babbitt, many other novels. He left Minnesota as soon as he could, headed east, worked for newspapers, for magazines, wrote some potboiler novels and a few serious ones. And then in 1920, when he was 35 years old, he walked up to H.L. Mencken and George Jean Nathan, editors of the magazine The American Mercury, and he put his arms around their necks and he started yelling that he was the best writer in the country and he'd just written the best book in the country that would be published in a week and they ought to read it. He went on like this at high volume for about half an hour. Mencken and Nathan finally escaped. Mencken thought Sinclair Lewis was an idiot, but he read the book, and he was bowled over by it. The book was Main Street, came out in 1920, about a small town, Minnesota, Gopher Prairie, which Sinclair Lewis said was inhabited by, quote, a savorless people, gulping tasteless food, and sitting afterward coatless and thoughtless in rocking chairs prickly with inane decorations, listening to mechanical music, saying mechanical things about the excellence of Ford automobiles and viewing themselves as the greatest race in the world. It was a scathing satire of small-town American life and a big sensation, and within 9 months it sold about 200,000 copies, and Sinclair Lewis became a very wealthy writer. And 2 years later he published Babbitt, which was also very successful. In 1930, he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. He wrote 22 novels in all, 16 of which involved Midwestern towns or Midwestern protagonists. He said he found creative inspiration, quote, sitting in Pullman smoking cars in a Minnesota village, on a Vermont farm, in a hotel in Kansas City or Savannah, listening to the normal daily drone of what are to me the most fascinating and exotic people in the world, the average citizens of the United States. Laura Ingalls Wilder, born just north of Pepin, Wisconsin, 1867, about which she wrote her book Little House in the Big Woods, which begins, once upon a time, 60 years ago, a little girl lived in the big woods of Wisconsin in a little gray house made of logs. She started writing these memoirs when she was in her 60s, and from them came a television series and an animated Japanese cartoon series called Laura the Prairie Girl and a musical. All of her books have remained in print since they were first published. They've been translated widely, and they have sold millions of copies. Here's a poem for today by Mark Strand, The Old Age of Nostalgia. Those hours given over to basking in the glow of an imagined future, of being carried away in streams of promise by a love or a passion so strong that one felt altered forever and convinced that even the smallest particle of the surrounding world was charged with a purpose of impossible grandeur. Oh, yes. And one would look up into the trees and be thrilled by the wind-loosened river of pale gold foliage cascading down and by the high melodious singing of countless birds. Those moments, so many and so long ago, still come back, but briefly, like fireflies in the perfumed heat of a summer night. The Old Age of Nostalgia, poem by Mark Strand, from Almost Invisible, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by our technical director, Thomas Schweitzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time now to answer our question. All the correct answers are put in the ceramic cow. We'll pick out one winner, and that winner will receive two passes to any Malco movie theater in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And the question today is the 200th birth anniversary of Charles Dickens.
Yes.
All sorts of people celebrating. The Google Doodle is dedicated to the characters.
Seen it yet.
It's dedicated to the characters of Dickens. I asked of all the movies that have been made. Inspired by, based upon a Charles Dickens work, what is the only one to win the Academy Award for Best Picture?
The only one I can think of other than what you mentioned is Oliver Twist.
Oliver Twist is the work, and in 1968, the musical Oliver, which had an exclamation point, won Best Picture.
Woo!
1968. Also, bit of trivia.
Yes.
Because you know I love trivia.
You do.
Oliver was the last G-rated film to win the Best Picture Award.
Really?
Yep. So there you go. We'll pick out a name in just a moment and call you if you're the winner.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Oliver.
Where is Oliver?
It is northwest of Waldron.
There you go. Did I ever tell you about the time Charles Dickens walked into a bar?
Tell me about it.
He ordered a martini and the bartender said, "Olive or twist?"
Well done.
I don't know about that. KUAF, thank you. We should get a drum in here.
We should.
KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of the region's history and culture. You went to see Time for Three?
I did. Ithy and I went on Friday night, and I know Katie went with her mom, and it was lovely. It was a lot of fun. And what was really cool is I didn't really know much about it, but when they came in for the interview in the morning, mm-hmm. we were so blown away. We were like, we have to go.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I had another commitment, but mm-hmm. I wish I could have gone.
It was really good.
And let's see.
What else have we done?
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did watch the Super Bowl, sort of. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I watched for the commercials. I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah.
There wasn't any that I was like, ah. Oh. I mean, you know, the Clint Eastwood one, halftime. That was well written, well done.
Yes, and unexpected. You don't expect to see Clint Eastwood in a commercial.
I did not. So that was cool. But, I mean, as far as me, like, laughing hysterically or something, not so much.
All right. I also want to thank the junior leadership group from Fayetteville,
yes.
Chamber of Commerce, that came here. Teenagers who will be people making policies for us someday.
Someday.
They took a tour. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You and I will be back tomorrow at noon.
We will.
With another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a great Tuesday.